appears imminent.
Our political editor, Chris Mason. BBC News.
And the news was read by Tom Sanders. This is BBC Radio 4. Ken Cheng is back in our 6:30 comedy after this.
On BBC iPlayer.
The sound of that guitar was the creation, I would say, of the Rolling Stones.
The story of an iconic band, six decades on, from making history.
The Stones recreated music, fashion.
Solos come and go, a riff lasts forever.
To overcoming controversy.
We were just having fun, and then the fuzz bust him. They're all against us, they want to shut us down.
As told by the band and the artists that know them best.
The black experience that is soulful. The Stones made it their own.
My life is a Rolling Stone.
Whoa, what a legacy.
Watch only on BBC iPlayer.
Well, now on Radio 4, containing some discriminatory language, it's Culture Clash Comedy in a new series of Ken Cheng, Chinese Comedian.
Thank you, I'm Ken Cheng, and welcome to the third series of Chinese Comedian. It's all about being a Chinese comedian. Very relatable concept, about five people know what that's like, and they won't be listening because they're my bitter rivals. I really didn't think there'd be a third series. After the second series, I really thought I'd run out of ideas, I'd run out of things to say about being Chinese. But luckily, something happened that put China back into the public discourse. I don't know if any of you were checking the news in January 2020. Naturally, being Chinese, I have a lot to say about coronavirus. Especially as I created it. In a lab, I think. That's what the well-informed members of the Twitter community seem to suggest anyway, that I, Ken Cheng, a professional comedian, am the sole inventor of COVID-19. I don't remember this happening, of course, but when you read a claim from a stranger on the internet who has 19 followers and a profile picture of a full English breakfast, you tend to trust them. The pandemic started weird for me. I got asked to go on CNN to talk about coronavirus. I'm not a medical expert. I think they picked my name by random out of a list of Chinese people. No, fair enough. They wanted to talk about the racism that was happening across the country and the world, a lot of racism. I got about 8 or 9 interview requests, and I did a couple of them, and the first thing they asked me was, have you experienced anyone treating you differently since the outbreak? And I was like, well, mainly, I'm getting way more interview requests. My career is really taking off because of this virus. It's a great time for me. I kind of miss it when only Chinese people had it. Like, that was our thing. White people just never let us have our own thing. You see it, you gotta take it. I'll say it, getting coronavirus is cultural appropriation. I do apologize. I have written a whole episode about the pandemic. When I pitched this, I assumed everyone will still wanna talk about it in a year's time. Spoiler, no one does. No comedy audiences want to hear about the pandemic. It's not because it was a hugely traumatic experience or because it's not interesting. Here's my theory. Every single thing the British public did during the pandemic was utterly embarrassing. And we're too ashamed to relive it. Why did people hoard toilet paper? British people love to hoard things like property, and generational wealth, and priceless artifacts from other countries. There's only a shortage because everyone thought there'd be a shortage. That's the worst time to panic buy is when everyone else is panic buying. The best time to panic buy is right now. That's what I'm doing. I'm buying up loads of toilet paper. Gonna sell it on when there's another crisis. I'm buying to let toilet paper. Some psychologists tried to explain why people were specifically hoarding toilet paper. I saw an article where one psychologist said the main contributing factor was FOMO. I don't think the reason I buy toilet paper is FOMO. If I've run out of toilet paper, my first thought isn't, I've missed out. If only I had some. Think of the endless possibilities. Another psychologist said that the panic was because the threat was new and unknown, and that people would start to act rashly after about a month. I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd use the word rational to describe the British public's behaviour between months 2 and 24 of the pandemic. I have a confession to make. I'm not afraid to admit this. I did not clap once for the NHS. Not afraid to admit that, that's right. Thank you. I didn't clap because I know how much my applause is worth. I've clapped at amateur improv before. For me to clap the NHS workers would be to say their work is on the same level as two 19-year-olds acting out a Harry Potter fellatio scene. It's not appropriate. People in the medical profession don't want applause. It should be saved for performance context. You wouldn't clap a doctor after a prostate exam. They want money. They want money through either tax or charity. I don't do either of those. Because I know how much my money is worth. I've paid for amateur improv before. I have a question to ask. Did anyone actually enjoy doing Zoom quizzes, or did we just forget what hobbies were? I don't mind them. But the more embarrassing thing about doing a Zoom quiz is cheating at a Zoom quiz. The people cheating at Zoom quizzes, and what's the point? At least with a pub quiz, there's a prize. The only prize if you win a Zoom quiz is everyone else in the Zoom quiz hates you. It's weird, we all hate the winners of pub quizzes, which is weird because Britain, as a country, we love celebrity quizzes. Celebrity quizzes are revered in this country. The British public's biggest heroes are quizzes, Martin Lewis, and historical figures who own slaves. The only thing more embarrassing than cheating in a Zoom quiz is suspecting someone of cheating in a Zoom quiz. We've all done it. Someone gets like 20 points more than second, they're cheating. I saw a post on Mumsnet. That's right, I was on Mumsnet. What are you gonna do about it? Saw a post that titled, "I suspect my friends are cheating in my Zoom quiz." The evidence? None. No evidence. They want to say, the same couple wins every week, and I suspect they're cheating. Your other friends are just dumb. That's it. That happens in literally every quiz. The same people win every time. That's how it works. They know more stuff. How do they feel when they watch Eggheads? These people are cheating. The same five win every time. Has anyone checked? Has anyone checked if they're cheating? Has anyone checked to see they're not using Google? I'm out of character now. This is just me. I think they're cheating. One reply to this thread really got me, though. Their suggestion was, what you do, here's how it works. You put in a fake question in that quiz, which has a fake answer, and then you set up a fake website, which has that fake answer. They copy down fake answer, you've caught them. That's some Colleen Rooney level stuff. I think that's how all fake news started, just people trying to catch quiz cheaters. All got out of hand when one quiz asked, is the earth flat? Question 6, which movie studio did they film the moon landing? I don't mean to knock Zoom. Zoom was a very important tool for the pandemic. I did a lot of Zoom gigs. I actually prefer them. The ability to do a gig half naked. Which half? I was topless. Pointed the camera at my jeans. Didn't make any sense. I was doing my own Zoom gig once, and it was half an hour in, and I got a message that said, you only have 10 minutes left of this Zoom call. Please upgrade to Zoom Premium. You just don't get that kind of high-stakes jeopardy in live stand-up. It's very rare that I'm on stage and I get interrupted and I have to get out my debit card and pay £14. I didn't actually have that bad a time in the pandemic. It was the small things I missed, like being able to cough in public while Asian. Luckily, I didn't encounter that much hate in person around that period. The main thing I got was my flatmate, Ted, told me that his mum warned him to be careful of me. And she's in tonight! No. Let's just say I didn't have to top up the gas bill that month. Ooh. I remember one of the earliest news stories was a Chinese student in Sheffield was physically harassed by a couple strangers in the street. And she said the reason they attacked her was because she was wearing a mask and that meant she had the virus. Now, I'm no scientist, but my first instinct when I see someone who I suspect of carrying a deadly disease isn't to go physically fight them. I must have missed that NHS pamphlet. Yeah, stay alert, wash your hands. If you see someone's symptoms, just go pummel them to the ground for the length of time it takes to sing Happy Birthday twice. I know some people got attacked and it was upsetting. It was upsetting. It was upsetting because it suggests that people out there no longer believe that Chinese people all know Kung Fu. And let me tell you, that is disgusting. What even is the point in being Chinese? You're telling me I got called Jackie Chan for 30 years and they still think they can take me? I did get a lot of abuse online, on Twitter around this time. Hate speech online was up 1,600% in that period online. I got a lot of abuse on Twitter. People will often tweet me same phrases like, this is all your fault, you are the virus, please stay away from my son Ted. Usual racist things that you get all the time. Lots of people tweeted me asking, when will you condemn your homeland for causing this virus? You see, not only did I create coronavirus, but it was my homeland, the country of China, not the UK, where I was born and have lived all my life. China, which helped spread coronavirus around the world, which, according to the same people, is also a hoax and doesn't exist. While everyone was assuming that all Chinese people had coronavirus, there were only 4 cases of coronavirus in the UK. 4 cases. That is fewer than there are Chinese comedians in this country. Therefore, if you sat next to a Chinese person on the tube and assumed they were a comedian, that would have still been statistically less racist. When there were only 4 cases, everyone was like, ah, good excuse to avoid every Asian person in public. 6 months later, when there were 1 million cases, everyone was like, let's go to the beach and form a human pyramid with 10,000 strangers and spit in each other's mouths. Well, the anti-lockdown stuff was weird. I had to cut out a friend for being an anti-vaxxer. That was fun. It was surprising. She was a normal, intelligent person. Every anti-vax I met before that looked like the kind of person who would just take a dump on the tube. You might think it's petty not being friends with someone for having a different political opinion. I don't. I've cut out friends for less. I once cut out a friend because they didn't like the film Ratatouille. They say you should be friends with people you disagree with. Why? Why would I be friends with people who are wrong? Just be friends with people you agree with. Then all your friends are right. I got yelled at by some anti-vaxxers outside the vaccine center. Had my vaccine, came out. They had hired a bus. They were on the top deck of a bus. They were just yelling on megaphones that people would come out of the vaccine center. They were saying, everyone should have freedom. Everyone should be free. I was like, you're on a bus. You've chosen to spend your freedom in London traffic on Edgware Road. You see a lot of anti-vax stickers everywhere. A lot of like, and 5G stickers. You know, you've seen those? Who's making all these stickers? Where all these stickers come from? I swear, a lot of being a conspiracy theorist is just arts and crafts. There's so many flyers and posters everywhere. I swear, 90% of being an anti-vax is laminating things. Which is surprising, because I thought they'd be against lamination, because lamination is just a vaccine for stationery. Why don't you just trust the natural immunity of the paper? My favorite anti-vaxxer trope was the anagrams. Did anyone see the anagrams? There was a tweet going around being like, Delta and Omicron, are anagrams of media control. Who's doing anagrams for the anti-vax movement? Whose two hobbies are anagrams and anti-vax? What's the cross-section there? Do you know who I blame? I blame Channel 4 daytime quiz show Countdown. Problem is, a lot of anti-vaxxers have a lot of time in the day. They get very good at tea time teasers. What do they even think the conspiracy is there? Like, the government have put in the anagrams to be like, aha, we got you, it was an anagram all along. Do they think the coronavirus was invented by Tom Marvolo Riddle? I understand it. I used to be an anti-vaxxer when I was 7. And we didn't have Facebook back then. I just came up with it up here. I came up with it independently. Some teachers tried to hold me down. They held me down to make me take a vaccine. Where was my freedom? That's why when I see people moan about it, I'm like, that's payback. We don't know what's in it. That's the argument. We don't know what's in it. I don't know what's in anything. Does anyone know what's in anything? I swear no one knows what's in anything. Like, what's in Crave? Does anyone know what's in Crave? I have no idea what's in Crave. They just appeared in our lives at some point. It's in the supermarkets. People still buy it. Nobody knows what it is. I tried to look up what Crave is. It describes itself as a chocolatey pillow. Their official slogan is, here comes Chocky Chocky. Most cereals tell you what they are. Cornflakes, that's flakes made of corn, great. Shredded wheat, that's wheat that's gone to the gym. Crave isn't even a word. Is it even a word? It's almost a word. It's almost the word crave, except that instead of a C, they use a K. You know, like the Klan. Anyway, I'm an anti-craver now. No, I'm not an anti-craver. I'm crave hesitant. I just don't think we can be picky about what we put in our bodies when we all abide by the 5-second rule. Yeah, sure, I won't take this drug which has gone through months of medical trials, but I'll happily eat up to 4.9 seconds of the floor. I will, by the way, accept 2 legitimate criticisms of the film Ratatouille. Let's go through them. Number one, the kiss scene. Does anyone remember the kiss scene?
Yeah.
No, no. Someone adamantly no. No one remembers. Everyone's wiped it from their memory. I'll remind you. So the 2 main human characters, Linguini, is talking to Colette, and he's about to reveal there's a rat in his hat doing all the cooking. But to stop this, Remy tugs on his hair, and that forces him forwards, and then they start kissing, and that's how the relationship starts? What an insane message to have in a kids' film. Like, there are a lot of non-consensual kisses in Disney, but this is the first time neither party has consented to the kiss. And the only thing that did consent was a little rat. What are they gonna tell their kids? Like, what's the How I Met Your Mother version of that love story? Oh, yeah, sit down, kids. The only reason you exist is because a rodent had control of my motor functions. Also, another detail you might not remember is that for this whole scene, just before the kiss, she gets out a pepper spray and holds it up and doesn't spray because the kiss was so good. What a weird thing to put in a kids' movie. No one gets out a pepper spray and goes, you know what? Let's wait this one out. Second criticism is I don't like how it reveals that Linguini is actually Chef Gusteau's illegitimate son. I don't like dad reveals in general, but I especially hate it here because the whole point is meant to be even a rat can become a chef. But here, instead, it's even a rat can become a chef as long as you befriend someone with a famous dad. You meet a lot of people with famous dads in comedy. In comedy, you're never more than 6 feet away from someone with a famous dad. And they're fine. And some of my friends have famous dads. They're all fine, friendly people, except they all have this energy that they're secretly thinking, I think having a famous dad should be an oppressed minority. They've all got this energy, like they've all got a secret 5,000 word essay in a desk drawer somewhere titled, Why It's Actually Harder to Have a Famous Dad. This is a third point. This is not a criticism, but it's the third bit about Ratatouille, which I'll throw in as a bonus. As a bonus, because because, you know, people love it so much. This is not a criticism, but it's more of a general point. But isn't it weird how the only reason they succeeded at the end is because the critic Anton Ego gives him a good review because it happens to be the dish that his mum made him as a child? What kind of food critic are you? You can't just expect every restaurant to make a food that reminds you of your childhood. I couldn't be a restaurant critic if that was the case. I'd just give every restaurant 0 stars if they didn't bring me 5 custard creams on a plate. So they called it the Chinese virus. That's what this episode is called, Chinese virus. A lot of people denied that the term Chinese virus was racist. They said it's not racist in the same way it's not racist that we call it the Spanish flu. I don't think Spanish people were consulted on the naming process. No one talked to a single Spanish person about that. Also, you might know this, but the Spanish flu didn't even come from Spain. What happened was they were the only country to report it in the media, and that's why people call it the Spanish flu. There's nothing Spanish about the Spanish flu. It's fake Spanish. It's pretending to be Spanish. It's the Hilaria Baldwin of diseases. It's Manuel from Fawlty Towers. It's a caricature of a Spanish disease. Here's a rule of the internet. For every single racist thing out there, there is always someone ready to deny that that thing is racist. For example, there's a large contingent online who insist that it's not racist to still refer to Chinese takeaways as a chinky. There's a lot of them out there, I've seen a lot, and the defense is always, we've always called it that, and it's too late to change. An 80-year-old man climbed Mount Everest. I think you can learn how to say the phrase Chinese restaurant. Also, they say stuff like, it's fewer syllables than saying Chinese takeaway. Well, why stop there? Why not just call it a cha? Hey, I'm gonna get a cha tonight. I'm ordering a cha. I'm gonna get the swa and supper. With ruh. You saw a lot of racism denial during the Black Lives Matter protests. A lot of people were supportive of the protests, but there were a lot of people who thought they aren't relevant here because they say Britain is the least racist country in the world. That's what a lot of people say. A lot of people say that. You hear that a lot online. Britain is the least racist country in the world. And this is according to a survey. And how the survey worked was they asked the participants the very foolproof question of, are you a racist? Because we know racists cannot lie. They are bound by the honor system. If you ask them, they have to say yes. They're like cops. It was an interesting time, the Black Lives Matter protests. Did anyone post a black square on Instagram? Some of you did, I know. Here's the thing. How it worked was everyone said, you better post a black square on Instagram, otherwise you're a racist. And everyone did it. But then, 3 days later, everyone said, actually, it's bad to post a black square, and if you do, you are a racist. That one was harsh on white people. I'll admit, that's on us. That was actually a practical joke, just to see if people would do it. Anyone post a reading list? I'm sure some of you did. How's that going, by the way? Have we all smashed our reading? I loved it, it was adorable. It was like, how are we gonna solve racism? I know, let's set ourselves some homework. My girlfriend, who is white, lives with white housemates, and in their house, they have 4 copies of Natives by Akala, and only 3 people live there. And none of them have read it. People often say Britain has a complicated history with racism. It's not complicated, it's very simple. Britain was racist, and it still quite is. It's complicated in the same way as if you were dating a man and you found out he was married, and he's like, oh, it's complicated. It's not complicated, it's very simple. You're married, and Britain did a lot of genocide around the world. A lot of British people are in denial about their history. Just take the Edward Colston statue. A lot of people defended that statue. Some even said, the Colston statue needs to be there to teach everyone that slavery is bad. I don't think that's an effective way to teach someone something is bad, to erect a statue of a person who did that bad thing and then not tell anyone that they did that thing. That statue was actually right next to a statue of Thanos. Next to that was Dick Dastardly. And next to that was a statue of the concept of insider trading. A lot of people turned up. People love statues in this country. I didn't realize this. People love statues. A lot of people, well, men turned up to rally around the Churchill statue. They stood in front of the Churchill statue to stop anyone from taking it down. So many men. I was thinking, how are so many men willing to turn up and defend a statue? But then you do have to remember that 42% of marriages do end in divorce. They got to do something with their time. Listen, standing in front of a statue won't get you your kids back. If you want to see your kids again, do it the old-fashioned way. Dress up as an elderly woman and pretend to be their babysitter. This is why I don't engage with anyone I disagree with, because I don't want to be friends with people who disagree with me that racism is bad. It's just a waste of time. Do you know how much time I used to spend arguing with strangers on the internet about political issues? Well, none, because I've always been wise. But other people do, and there's no point. Everyone's always like, you're in an echo chamber. And I'm like, oh no, I'm in an echo chamber where everyone's not racist. How terrible, all this non-racism bouncing back and forth into my ears. We just can't agree on the most basic things anymore. Whether racism is bad, whether vaccine is good, what you call a bread roll. Some people call it a BAP, others call it a work event. I think that's what people were arguing about. I kind of tuned out. If there was a conclusion to this episode, it would be that the events of the last 2 years have made me more pessimistic about the human race. That's it. That's peace. No. Imagine if that's how I ended the show. Just peace. Be a good way to end. It's just been an embarrassing time for Britain. Hate crime was up, corruption was up, there were a lot of anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers. The British public just could not react to this crisis in a satisfactory, rational way. Like, I don't think anyone really came to terms with the racism that East Asians faced during the pandemic. I don't think anyone really talked about it as soon as we went into lockdown. Because the thing was, it wasn't just the alt-right which acted this way towards Asian people. It was the British public at large. It was coming from everywhere. And I don't really have a solution to any of this. Because I don't engage with people. I don't talk to any of these people because I disagree with them. So there's not much that can be done. Peace. No, that's not. I can think of one thing we can all do to make things better. Keep putting me onto TV and radio to talk about it. Also, if you see Ted's mum, be careful of her. Thank you, Abhi Ken Cheng. You're fantastic. Ken Cheng, Chinese comedian, was written and performed by me, Ken Cheng. The producer was Rajiv Karia, and it was a BBC Studios production.